Mr. President, Rosh Yeshiva, worthy rabbis, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Yeshiva University, it is my privilege to welcome you this evening to the third and final lecture of the three lectures comprising the Benjamin Gottesman Presidential Lectures in Jewish Thought. It is a special delight to acknowledge this evening the presence of Mr. and Mrs. Benjamin Gottesman and family. On behalf of all of us, I welcome Mr. and Mrs. Gottesman and wish to express publicly to them our deepest gratitude for helping make this evening possible. Tonight's lecture is also the Mrs. Tanya Soloveitchik and Dr. Samuel Soloveitchik Memorial Lecture, adding even more significance to what, in any event, is a spiritual and intellectual feat without parallel in this generation, namely a public address by the Rav. No introduction can do justice to our speaker this evening. One can, however, render kavod la Torah, and I can think of no more appropriate way to do so than to call upon the president of Yeshiva University, Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb, who will introduce the Rav, President Lamb.
Kvod Moron Harav Shlita, distinguished guests, members of the Gottesman family, students, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, as the Enlightenman pointed out, these words of introduction are superfluous, they're unnecessary. Indeed, it's rather presumptuous for anyone to introduce the Rav to an assembly of Lomdei Torah and Shocharei Torah. But there's something special about this year's drasha, about this year's lecture. V'kidashtem eshnas ha-chamishim shana. We have to sanctify the 50th year, the Jubilee year, and this is the Jubilee year for the Soloveitchik family's connection with Yeshiva University. It was in 1929 that Hagaon Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, came here to teach. And it is some 38 years, ad mea v'yesrim shana, that the Rav has been marbit Torah barabim here at Yeshiva University. And therefore, this is a special occasion, and that is my excuse, my apologia, for daring to presume upon the Rav and upon you to introduce him, albeit very briefly. The Zohar tells us in a most fascinating passage about Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai on the day that he passed away, that by he yomer debar Rabbi Shimon le'estalik ben olma, the day that Rabbi Shimon was about to depart from the world, havar misadeim miloi, he prepared himself, arranged his affairs, and iskansu chavrayo legabei Rabbi Shimon. The colleagues, the chachamim, the students, disciples, came to pay their respects to their teacher. V'havamal yobesa, the house was full. There was no room to move. Zokaf Rabbi Shimon Enei v'choma v'chorismayo besa. Can you hear me? Rabbi Shimon, too much. Rabbi Shimon looked about and saw that the house was filled, whereupon bocha Rabbi Shimon, he began to weep, and he said, there was another time that I was very, very sick, and at that time only one person came to visit me, v'havar Pinchas Bayor kamoi, the great disciple of Rav Shimon, Rav Pinchas Bayor, came to visit him. And at that time, Ischad Isha kamoi, he was enveloped in fire, u'me'alman lo yispasak, and that flame never left him. Vahashta, but now I see something different. Now I see that it's pasik. Now I see that the fire has left. There is no longer any fire. Vaha ismalya beza, but the house is full. Rabbi Shimon wept when he saw that he now had great popularity, but there was no longer a fire. And he preferred the Ischar Isha to the Ismalya Besa. In the contest between contents and fame, between passion and popularity, the Zohar clearly chooses Ischar Isha over Ismalya Besa. Better depth and content and profundity than mere popularity. I mention this because Ashreinu Uma Tov Chalkeinu. How fortunate are we, not only in this yeshiva, but in all the city, in all the country, indeed in all the world, we have here distinguished guests from Israel as well, that this last Yovel, this last Jubilee, this last half century, and especially under the tutelage and leadership of the Rav, the last 38 years, we have not had to choose, because we have been blessed with both in the person of the Rav, Ischar Isha and Ismali Besa. We have Ischar Isha, the Rav's depth, his gaonis, his ever-growing creativity, which are legend. And at this point, Kol HaMosiv Goreya, I will say no more. And at the same time, Ismali Besa, the recognition by a very grateful public, especially we of Yeshiva University, who are all of us, myself included, his Talmidim, was his Talmud, is his Talmud, and hopes to remain his disciple for many, many years to come. Our prayer for the Rav is a me'alman lo espasik, that he may continue to be our teacher, to instruct us, guide us, and enlighten us for 120 years.
Thank you. I saw you have the mic. There is an echo of the feedback. It's impossible to hear. Where's the... Yeah, but there's a feedback. What do you say? Not in the back, but in the front. I'm trying anyway. This is the mic. Not the mic yet, all right. Could you take my glasses? What is this? Okay. Thank you. Okay. So the topic is the Haftorot, which we read on the Sabbath and the Shabbat. Between Passover and Shavuos, I would like to analyze a few Haftorot and find the common link or the common denominator between the Haftorot and the Parshas Hayom. The portion of prophets we read on the Shabbat and the Sabbath. Hashanah, of the Shabbat Hashanah, and holidays, this portion is supposed to address itself to an aspect which was mentioned in the Parsha, in the Kriyas Parsha. Maimonides distinctly and explicitly mentioned that the Haftorah should always concern itself with the motif which we found in the Parsha during the Kriya. At the end of his Siddur, he says, Mi mein ha-parsha, a master must treat a topic which is already was already mentioned by the parsha. In other words, there is a common denominator, a requirement for a common denominator, for a common topic or motif in the parsha, parsha sayim, and in the Haftorah. Let me say, and you know it, you don't need my statement, that it is not always easy, not always simple, to find similarity, let alone identity, of themes in the Haftorah and in the Parsha. Very difficult sometimes. At times, we are simply baffled by the choice of a particular Haftorah which prima facie has absolutely nothing in common with the Parsha. In such cases, an analysis in depth is indispensable. As a matter of fact, lately it's just curiosity on my part, inquisitiveness, but I have tried in many cases to find this common denominator in certain parshas and the corresponding Haftorahs. In some, I have been very successful. Some I could not find. In some I couldn't find the common denominator, and I plead ignorance. It happened so that in Vayikra, and lately, while listening to the Haftorah recited by the Maftir, my thoughts were centered about this common motif or denominator in the Parsha and the Haftorah, and I arrived at certain conclusions and which I would like to share with you tonight, and somehow it is my service, or it is adorability, because the first part of my lecture will revolve about Yerushalayim and Kedushas Yerushalayim. Tomorrow night is Yom Yerushalayim. Is it so, or you have forgotten? You see, I believe we have Mr. Coroner. Isn't tomorrow night Yom Yerushalayim? Yeah. All right. May I add that the results of such an investigation, such an analysis in depth, are extremely gratifying. We gain insights, new insights into the Parsha and the Haftorah. At times, one sentence suffices to establish the unity of motifs in the Parsha and the Haftorah. One sentence. At times, one word. Whenever we detect the common motive in the Parsha and the Haftarah, we feel that a new light, in cases like that, a new bright light was cast upon the whole Parsha and the whole Haftarah. Permit me to protect you, to present to you two analytical studies. Whether I'll be able to present to you the second, I don't know. It depends upon the clock. I can't see the clock here because of the light. And be careful. I mean, one takes a risk if he comes in to a hall where I'm lecturing without a watch. But anyway, the first one, I hope, in Yirtzeh Hashem, to conclude. Yom Yerushalayim is associated with the first one. So that Israel may stay here. Permit me to present to you two analytical studies embracing several Haftorahs. We just finished reading. The first study will concern itself with four Haftorahs. Achremes, Kedeshim, Behar, Bechukesa. We just read up. Four Haftorahs. The second one, I hope I'll have time to present to you, is concerned with Emor and Tazria Metzer. There is topical unity in the Haftorot of the Achimeis Gdeshim Behar B'Chukesai. There is also topical unity, thematic unity, in the Haftorot of Emor and Tazria. I mean, I ask for Chumash. Do you have a Chumash? It's too heavy. Yeah. Yeah. I wish to start with the Haftorot of Achrimois and Kedeshim. What Haftorot would I choose for Achrimois and Kedeshim if the choice had been left to me, of course? I would say that if the choice had been left to me, I would have chosen, selected two Haftorot for Achrimeis, the Haftarah in Yecheskel Simen Chav Beis 22, Vayi Dvar HaVishem Alai Lomer V'yato Ben Odom Asishpeit Yisir Adamim, Thou Son of Man, Thou Son of Man, you just sit in judgment over the city of bloodshed, ve'yedaito yiskol te'aveisel, and you inform the people of the city that all the abominations they committed. It is most fitting for the Parsha Achrimeis. The Parsha Achrimeis, the last The last parsha particularly is concerned the sex sins, chetarayis, and also shlichas damim, bloodshed, avidizore, melech. It would be the proper after to be recited on the Shabbat of Achrimes and Kedeshim. Kedeshim I would recite a similar after in also from Yecheskel, but treating the same topic. Vayidvar Hashem Elai Leimer Ben Odom Daber al Zikne Yisrael Asish Peit Eisom. Will you sit in judgment over them? Asish Peit Ben Odom Estei Aveis Aveisom. Will you sit in judgment over them because of the abominations which their parents or their ancestors were engaged or committed? Those are the proper afters. As a matter of fact, in many chumashim they are printed, those afters. In many shuls, in many batiknesses, I discovered that still those two afters are being recited and read, and each one on its respective Shabbat. Chof an Achrimes, Chof Beis an Kedeshim. The Rambam in Sider, where at least all the afters, also as for Achrimes and Kedeshim, two afters from Yecheskel. There was no problem. However, there are many communities, particularly in Lithuania, many, many communities, and also many poskim who recommended that the afteres be replaced, the afteres from Yecheskel be replaced by an afteres from Amos, the first prophet. And instead of the afteres dealing with the Chet Arayis, we should read the portion from of the prophecy by Amos on both Shabbatot, on Kedeshim and Achrimes. And in a leap year, if the year is a plane, so you read Achrimes Kedeshim at one time, so you read Kivnei Tishrim only once. However, if the year is a leap year, if it is a leap year, and Kedeshim and Achrimes are separated from each other, so then according to the Minhag Lita, and according to many opinions of Poskim, G'dele Achronim, you read Kivnei Kushuim twice. On Shabbos and Achrimes, as well as on the Shabbos of Kedeshim. Alei Kivnei Kushuim atem libne Yisroel lumad Hashem. Ale es Yisroel leisi meretz Mitzrayim uflishti mekafter v'arom mekir. We don't understand the relationship of that portion, of that prophecy to Achrimei, to the laws and aloches, I mean formulated in the parsha from Achrimei's occupation. There is no similarity at all between the Aftere and the Parshas. What is the reason, actually? What is the reason that we replace the Aftere from Yecheskel with an Aftora of Amos? Of course, there is no mystery. I mean, the answer is very simple. At least the first answer is simple. Then another question, I mean, rises, and we'll have difficulty in solving this question. There is no mystery at all. There is a brighter in Megillah, the end from Megillah, as well as Masechet Sofrim, which quotes the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer Rav Elazar says, "Ein maftir in vitei avis Yerushalayim." You should not recite the prophecies about Teyavis, the abomination of Yerushalayim, Kolika. You don't mention them at all. Neither for Achemes nor for Gdeshim. Shouldn't. Maisi Be'echot, and the Masechet Sofrim, and as well as the Gemara, the Megillah, says, Maisi Be'echot, it happened that someone individual, he was probably on the second floor, Rabbi Lezer was on the street floor. I mean, geographically, as far as the spatial terms, he was above Rabbi Lezer. He recited the maftir for Achemes or Gdeshim, the Aftere from Teyavis Yerushalayim from Yechezkel. Omar le Rabbi Lezer, so Rabbi Lezer told him, Reiko, fool. You are so interested in to indict Yerushalayim of all crimes. Say you beg Dimoch, investigate your maternal background, the family tree. So the Masechet Sofrim says, Umotso b'imei shipsula. And they found some psul as far as the mother is concerned. True. The Gemara in Idile says lafuke mit Rabbi Lezer. The Aloch is not like Rabbi Lezer. That's the Gemara in Idile. But the Masechet Sofrim didn't say it. Masechet Sofrim quoted Rabbi Lezer, and apparently because he's in full agreement with Rabbi Lezer. That means according to Masechet Sofrim, is the Aloch like Rabbi Lezer. So since the Aloch is like Rabbi Lezer, so the two afteres from Yechezkel, Chof and Chof Beis, are ruled out, and they are replaced by another affair, namely, to make a Shiim from Amos. And as I said before, and we are so careful and meticulous about it, that in a leap year, we read the Aftere of Amos twice. Only a few Afteres are read and reread during the year, during the annual cycle. But here, a plain Aftere is recited for Achemes, and the same is recited for Gdeshim. Of course, we have accepted Rav Lezer's opinion that a Jew who bought maftir for $25 has no right to criticize Jerusalem. He has no right to repeat the words of the Novi, of the prophet. And he should not charge Jerusalem, the maftir, this crime, grave sins, and transgressions and abominations. He has no right. The question is, now I mean, if you could state the question. So that's why we have replaced the Afteres of Achemes Gdeshim as far as the Nivui of Yechezkel is concerned. We don't recite it. Fine. Yeah. But there is still a question. I mean, I haven't answered. Why Amos? Why Amos? You could have, Chazal, Chachmei Yisrael, could have chosen, selected another Aftere, which has some similarity to the Parshas Aftere, which have something in common with the Parshas Aftere, with the Kriya. We have chosen the Aftere of the first Novi, of the Amos, which, prima facie, at first glance, has absolutely no relationship to whatever the theorist formulated in Achemes invasion. Not at all. At first glance, not a single sentence unites Amos with the Parshas Gedeshim Menachemes in the Torah? The answer, I believe, is obvious, not difficult. Both Sedras, Silvas, between Achimais and Gedeshim, told the people something which frightened them. They addressed the people for the first time since they left Mitzrayim. For the first time, something frightening, horrifying. Namely what? That there is a possibility, and perhaps not only a possibility, but a probability or perhaps a certainty, that in the future they lose the land and they will be exiled from their ancestral land into an endless, bleak and dreary road. That there is a reality which he called Galut was disclosed to the people in Nachemei Segdeshim for the first time. The Torah says for the first time, later the Torah repeated this warning, but Nachemei Segdeshim, the people to whom Nachemei Segdeshim was revealed through Meshe, by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through Meshe, were taken aback. What did they hear? They heard a few sentences which they did not understand well. And they got frightened. Terrified. Horrified. What happened? She has called Atei Yisrael, all those abominations. Osu Anshi Oretz Asher Lifneichem were committed by the people of the land who preceded you, your coming to the land. Vatitamei Oretz, Vatitmo Oretz, and the land became defiled. Velisoki Oretz Eschem, and the land should not vomit you out, cast you off. Ushmartem Eskolchut, this is in Achemes, Vayikro Chavtes Chavches. Then in Gedeshim, Ushmartem es kol chukeisav es kol mishpotai, Vasisem eisom, Veleisoki oret, the same expression, the same idiom, Veleisoki oret es eshet. The land will not throw you up, vomit you out. It's a very strange word. Asher animei v'eschem shomor l'shevet bo, to which I brought you in order to live there for many, many, many years. But should you commit those abominations, so the land will simply shake you off. As a matter of fact, the Torah emphasizes that exile from the land, or departure from the land, in such a case, is a natural phenomenon. Not a penalty. It is a phenomenon which can be explained in terms of cause and effect, in causal terms, could be understood. It's not a special inish imposed upon the Jewish people. But it is a result of certain behavior on the part of the people. It fits into the scheme of causality, of cause and effect. The land in wealth, the land does not tolerate immorality, particularly immorality of harayas and murder and bloodshed. And it casts off the people who defile themselves with such abominable deeds, the way Rashi says, a prince who has a very delicate digestive system, will throw up if he'll be fed food which is slightly spoiled. Eretz Yisrael is a very delicate, a very tender land. It does not tolerate every avera. It does not tolerate it. It shakes them off. You don't have to be punished for that. It's simply the soil, the particles of the soil, shake off every avera. Rashi says, Moshe ben Melech, Shechelu Dover Mos, Sheinaim et Bemeyov, Umeiti, Kacharet Israel, Eino Mekayemes Aleo, Aleo, Evri Avera. It's like Rashi says it, like the prince who throws up, if he was fed something which was spoiled, or not the best, finest quality. Because he has a delicate digestive system. So is Eretz Yisrael very sensitive. Certain averes in Chutz La'aretz are different assessed than they would have been in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael not is a ben melochim, but a bas melech, but very, very delicate, very tender, very meticulous. And Golus is not a punishment. It is the natural consequence of heaven. That's what Rashi wanted to explain. No? So what? Then this the people had for the first time. That Eretz Yisrael cast out sinners, or those who defile themselves and defile the land with their deeds. So wouldn't you say that the Chachomim dealt with this problem of an afteret, to choose the proper afteret for Achrimeis and Gedeishim, faced, what shall I say, a dilemma? There were two possibilities. One possibility is that the topic, that the theme of Gedeishim and Achrimeis should be, the laws pertaining to Arayas, to Avodah Zarah, to Melech, in Gedeishim, the laws pertaining to Shabbos, to Kibud Av Ve Em. You could have found such a prophecy or a portion which would correspond, which would run parallel to those basic laws which are mentioned in Gedeishim or Achrimeis. Rashi, at the beginning of the Gedeishim, says this parsha includes Gufei Torah, the very tenets of our Torah. So it was quite possible, to choose some chapter in Isaiah or Yechezkel or in any other book of prophets which would correspond, would run parallel to the Gufei Torah which were formulated in Gedeishim as well as in Emea. There is another possibility. This is one alternative, one possibility. But the Chachon had another possibility, namely, to declare at the central theme in Achrimeis and Gedeishim is Golus. The central theme consists in this sentence, V'leisoki yor etzeshet. We have the Maftir has got to react to that sin, to the sin of Golus, which was new, something new and incomprehensible to them. The Chachomim had the
the choice either to prefer the Gufei Teire and declare them as the central theme of Gneshim, and then fashion the Aftera in accordance with the Gufei Teire, Leise Kachshu, Leise Shakru, Leise Shmila Shoker, important mitzvahs, Yishori Mitiro, Veshapsei Set Yishmeru, the Solom Pula Socher, Yitzhak HaBeker, Vahavta L'Reacho Kameicho, V'Yereisu Ad Hashem Elokecho. Those laws, tenets, principles of morality, the basic principles of our morality, could have become the central theme of Gneshim, and the Aftera would have been fashioned in accordance with those principles, would correspond to those with those principles. However, the Chachamim decided differently. If the Aftera are like Ibnei Kishuim at the Beis Yisrael, is accepted, so what is the central theme? What is the central theme of Achimei Sedeshim? What? Goles. And how to avoid it? The Aftera should answer how to avoid Goles. How not to be trapped by Goles. Not to be confronted by that curse of Goles. And if Chachman al Islam, Chas v'Sholem, the Jew should be the exiled from his land, how to get back to the land. And that is why Chazal chose the Aftera from Amos. He gives the answer, Amos. Before Isaiah and before Yom Yom, before Isaiah, before Yom Yom, and before Yechezkel, Amos proclaimed the emune, our faith, in Shiva's Bnei Agil Eretz Yisrael, in the return of our people from captivity to Eretz Yisrael. And they chose the Aftera of Amos, the portion of Amos, from Amos' prophecy, which is most characteristic for Leisoki Oretz, most characteristic and the most direct, which has a direct, I would say, a direct approach to the curse of Goles, which was mentioned, in the parsha. V'chafti yeshvusa miYisrael. In the time of Chazal, when needed support and encouragement, and particularly they had to believe that all the persecutions that the Golis is just a temporary transient phenomenon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will finally bring them back. The Emunah B'Bias HaMashiach would have been undermined if Chazal hadn't selected the last pasuk in Amos as the response to the warning of Golis, which Moshe addressed to the people. Yes, the people might be exiled. They might lose the land and everything which they cheered, and everything which was dear and holy to them. But this is just transient phenomena. They'll come back to the land, and whatever they lost will be recovered. And of course, it is Golis is bad, even if it's transient, short-lived, just a short experience. However, the final destiny of the Jew will be fulfilled the way Amos foresaw and Amos predicted. At this point, we encounter the very principle which lies at the root of the Haftorah institution in general. We have three institutions. We have three Satere, and we have the Novik, the Rebbe Novik. What's the difference between those three institutions? Three Satere was introduced in order to acquaint the people with the Torah, to acquaint them with the laws. You know, I mean, in the time of Chachmei HaTalmud, they had a Meturban who used to explain and tell them what the laws are. This is first. The Haftorah was introduced for a different reason. But as far as the law is concerned, is a Novi Rashoi L'Chadosh Dovah. A Novi cannot add anything, I mean, to the system of law which was given to us by HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Moshe, through Moses. The rules, the institution of Haftorah was introduced for a different purpose. Namely, what? To strengthen the faith of the people in the final redemption and the final return to Eretz Yisrael of the Knesset Yisrael. In one word, the Haftorah reminds the people of B'Yas HaMashiach. And if you want, I mean, you may ask me, how did I arrive at this conclusion? What do you say? Because if you read of the broches of the Haftorah, so you will realize immediately that all the broches revolve, circle around one article of faith, namely, וְדֹבֶר אֶחָד מִדְבָרֶךְ אֹכֶל לְיֹשֶׁב רֵיקָה כִּי מֶלֶךְ נָמָן רַחְמָן אֲתָה וַתֶּבָה יוּ פְרָמִיסְת וְאֹתָם תְּרוּה. That the great eschatological messianic promise will finally be realized, no matter how difficult times were, no matter how difficult it was to believe in the final restoration of old glory and the fulfillment of all hopes. Nevertheless, and in spite of all the difficulties, the promise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to his people will come true. And here was a problem. On the one hand, the people listened to Yetzirah Satere, and the people got frightened. They couldn't understand. The land to which they are marching, after all they were on their march from Mitzrayim to Israel, will be given to them just for a short while. If they should commit sins, and they knew very well that sins are going to be committed, a man is very limited in his freedom, in his choice. If they should commit a sin, they will be cast off, or cast out of the land. They will be vomited out. So why Mitzrayim? Why it is Mitzrayim? Why Matan Torah? They couldn't understand it. And nor could, I mean, the people, the contemporaries of the Chachmei Talmud understand. So that's why the prophecy by Amos was introduced, to tell the people, no matter how bad Golas is, and no matter how severe the punishment will be, as a matter of fact, there would be no need to punish. It's a natural consequence. Golas is a natural consequence of sin. Sin and Eretz Yisrael somehow are mutually exclusive.
Yes.
No matter how difficult, the final destiny will be realized, and those destiny will be the Jew will be planted in Eretz Yisrael, not for a short time, not as a transient, but just as a temporary guest or visitor in Eretz Yisrael, but will be planted in a manner that he'll become a part of the land, and will not trade Malad Mosam, will never be removed from the land. In the interest, the whole Asteris serves the same this purpose, to assure the Jew of the final realization of all the promises given to him by God. And this was the best place where the Jew was should have been reminded that in spite of the martyrdom we will have to experience, the final destiny of ours, which is combined with Eretz Yisrael, will be fulfilled and realized. So what is the main parsha as far as Achimei's Gdeshim are concerned? What's the main apostle? Where is the parallelism? The similarity? Goles and Gula. Temporary Goles and permanent Gula. If you take the Pasuk in Achimei's Gdeshim, so you compare it with the few Pesukim in Amos, so you arrive that the main apostle consisted in having assured the people that the Goles will be short, the Gula will be forever. May I add a personal, something personal? It took me months until I unraveled that. I couldn't understand. Finally, it dawned upon me. This is the law. This is the last part of Amos. Will you not shu'ed malad Moshe? That's what made this parasha, so to say, which converted, actually, the Aftere, instead of condemning the people for abomination, brings words of solace and encouragement and faith to the people. Now I'm expecting a question. Yeah. Expecting a question. It was all right. Is everything so smooth that there's not a single question? What? Because Golas is mentioned twice in Achimei's Negdeshim. So we read the same Aftere on the Shabbos of Achimos and the Shabbos of Leshem. We don't want that the warning of Golas be read without reacting or without responding. That's why the very moment we read about the good possibility of Golas, we right away, because the Sokka Oret Eschem is at the end of the parshas, at the end of Achimei's and the end of Gdeshim. Right away you respond. Yes, it will happen. But God will return the people from captivity to Eretz Yisrael. And that time, forever. They'll stay in Eretz Yisrael forever. I want you to know, I'm not speaking like a Zionist. I don't preach Zionism. This has nothing to do with Zionism. This is Gufa Shel Torah. There is another problem which you have to solve. Namely, the Navi did not say how the Jews will come back. What will make them return? And the Navi did not tell us whether or not the land will wait for us. Perhaps the land will not wait for us to be occupied, invaded, cultivated, and developed into a civilized country without our participation. It was a historical possibility. How is a return to the land which vomited out its inhabitants 1900 years ago, because they defiled themselves and as well as her, possible? How is such a return is possible? Does the land wait so long for our children to come back the way a loving mother who waits the return of her child, of her only child? Or the land is not as tender, not as loving as a mother is. What guarantees the return of the children to the land? So the question is basically a double question. Does the land wait for her children? Do the children want to come back? It's a double question, it's not one question. There's no answer in Amos about it. In answer, Amos, there is promise, pledge, haftacha, yes. But Amos does not explain to us how. What is the guarantee? What will make the bonds so permanent, strong between people and land? What is responsible for the patience which the Knesset Israel on the one hand, and the land, Eretz Israel, on the other hand, will wait or will expect the return of the children to the land? I believe that answer lies in a halachic category. This is my opinion. I've thought about it a lot. I believe this is to be found, the answer is to be found in a halachic category. Namely, what would you suggest? Which category? In a halachic term, let's say. Namely, what? What guarantees? Where is the document, the star? I say halachic term. I mean, it's a very simple word, and I haven't discovered anything new. Namely, that somehow our rights to Eretz Yisrael, we have rights, that's at least what we say. We have a right to the land. We are the rightful owners of the land. As well as our right to the Beit HaMikdash, to the Har HaBayis, or to Yerushalayim. And by the way, and again, it's not Zionism, it's just Tirosh Baal Peh. Let me say, according to the Halacha, Yerushalayim is not a city. It's called Yer David, yes. But according to the Halacha, it is not a city. Yerushalayim is a part of the Beis HaMikdash. It's the one Kedusha. Sholesh Machmei, say Israel. In the Midbar, the people were divided into three camps. Machmei Israel, the camp of the Israelites, of the ordinary Jews. Machmei Levi, Levio, or the camp of the Levites. and finally Machne Shechina, the camp where God resides. Yerushalayim is Machne Yisrael, it's a part of the Beis HaMikdash. Our claims to Yerushalayim are not only based on the promise which the Almighty gave to Abraham with regard to Eretz Yisrael, not only on that promise, but it also means based upon the Parsha Re'eh, L'shichne tidrashu v'osa shomo. You'll detect the place where he resides, and to that place you'll be coming. Is Yerushalayim is actually two, there are two Gdushas to Yerushalayim. Gdushas Eretz, the Gdusha which pervades the entire land, its entire topography and geography. And secondly, Gdushas HaMikdash. The Gdusha which pervades the Harabais as well as Yerushalayim. Different types. Is Eretz Yisrael, our right to Eretz Yisrael as a land, or to Yerushalayim as not only as a city, but as a part of the Beis HaMikdash, our right to both the land as well as Yerushalayim is based upon one word, Gdusha. Without Gdusha, we have no right. If someone should deny Gdusha Sarat, or should deny Gdusha Yerushalayim, to say the land is a land like any other territory, and Yerushalayim is just a city, and the Harabais is just a hill, or nowadays it is a valley, you go downstairs in order to get to the Harabais. But there is nothing unique, there is nothing singular about it, the land in Yerushalayim. So by making that statement, he forfeits all rights to Yerushalayim and to the Beis HaMikdash. It's a question of Gdusha. Now there is a plain problem with which the Baal HaTosfos preoccupy themselves, as well as many Rishonim, but the most outstanding Rishon who actually introduced a new concept, a new perspective with regard to that problem of Gdusha is Maimonides. Excuse me, I'm assimilated. You can't resist, Goles. There is a question, I'm trying to develop my mind this idea, but I'll change the vocabulary a little bit. There is a question which should be formulated properly and answered courageously. Are chub and gedusha, two good words, but two words in the Hebrew language, chub and gedusha, two mutually exclusive categories, two opposites, they contradict each other? Desolation and the presence of Gdusha are mutually exclusive, are two opposites, because Gdusha resides in Binyan, in beautiful architecture, in orderliness, in wholesomeness, and in prosperity. Desolation, debris, ruins, ashes, terminate all kinds of Gdusha, and the exalted disappears under the ruins and the debris. Ashes covers up Gdusha, and the Gdusha vanishes. This one approach. It's, halachically. Oh, the reverse is true. Oh, the reverse is true. It's correct. Kedusha tolerates Churban. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu can reside not only in the beautiful Beis HaMikdash, but on the desolate mount, Har HaTzion Sheshomeim, Sheolim Ruchobo. He can reside on the desolate mount, where the foxes come up and down, walk up and down. He can be covered with ashes and debris and still reside in that particular spot, which is frightening as far as desolation is concerned. The problem, the halachic problem. Strange, this problem was picked up in the Torah in the Chukesai, in the parsha which we just read, last Shabbos. There is a strange pasuk in the Chukesai. V'nosati yesoreichem choro, and I'll make your towns desolate. V'ashimesi es mikdashechem, and I'll make your sanctuaries or your bote mikdash desolate. Leoviach b'reach nechechem, v'ashimesi ani yisoretz, v'shomu oleo eveichem, ayeshvim bo. And I will make your cities a waste, and will bring your sanctuaries into desolation, and I will bring the land into desolation, and your enemies that will dwell thereof will be astonished. But let us just select three words. Vashimesi es mikdashechem. And I'll make your sanctuaries waste or desolate. You just read it. This phrase, Vashimesi es mikdashechem, lends itself to double interpretation. Interpretation number one. Your sanctuaries will be in a state of desolation, which, and in consequence, the Kedusha will be terminated, since waste and holiness, desolation and exaltedness, are mutually exclusive. Vashimesi es mikdashechem, I'll destroy physically your sanctuaries, completely destroyed, just debris, ashes, dumping places. And by destroying the physical sanctuaries, I'll destroy the idea of Kedusha, which hovered over them. There'll be no Mikdashechem anymore, because Shimon and Mikdash, as I said before, are mutually exclusive. I shall make your mikdashim a waste. Of course, this is the negative interpretation. This can be interpreted in the positive as well. Vashimesis mikdashim. I'll destroy physically your body mikdash, even though, nevertheless, they'll remain mikdashim, in spite of everything. So actually there are two pshatim, two interpretations. What's European, the right interpretation? I mean, I don't mean the interpretation you like. Okay. I mean, from the standpoint of Torah Sheba'al Peh, which one is the right? Huh? Yeah, I know that I have your endorsement, your agreement with that. Yeah, I couldn't decide between two interpretations. without quoting a Gemara. The Gemara helps out sometimes. Gemara is very helpful. The Mishnah in Megillah, I believe it's one of the last Mishnahs in Megillah, says Beis HaKnesses Shechora, a Beis HaKnesses which was destroyed, was consumed by fire, or desecrated by our enemies. Just debris, a heap of debris and ruins. So all the laws pertaining to Beis HaKnesses applies not only to Beis HaKnesses, which is built, but to Beis HaKnesses, which is in desolation, in a state of waste. Shenema, the Mishnah says, Vashimesis mit the Sheikh, Afal Pisha Shemim in Hemo, even though the desolate, the Gdushosa Mememim, the Gdusha has not disappeared, has not vanished. Gdusha is not frightened by Chum. The Rambam, in Yuches Bet Abchiro, developed the idea that Gdushas HaMikdosh, which was introduced by King Solomon, by Shlomo HaMelech, continued throughout the ages and the millennia to hover over the Yerushalayim and the Harabais. And Gdusha Rishino Kitcho Leshaito, the Kitchel of Sidlove, the first Gdusha, means Shlemis, King Solomon's Gdusha, or David's Gdusha, I don't know exactly who consecrated the Beis HaMikdash, Shlemis or David. We don't know that, but it doesn't matter as far as we are concerned. If you see, throughout the millennia, since the first Kiddush, the Gdusha prevailed, regardless of the fact that so many years, the Beis HaMikdash, For so many years, Beis HaMikdash has been in a state of desolation. Physical desolation does not cancel the category, does not eliminate Gedusha and exaltedness. The exaltedness of the place, why? And the Rambam asks himself, why? Why do I say so? Why do I say so? Why does it, as a matter of fact, with regard to Gdusha Soaretz, to the holiness of the land, the sanctity of the land, the Rambam is of the opinion that the Gdusha which was introduced by the Yeshua was discontinued at the time of Nebuchadnezzar, when his legions occupied Eretz Israel, invaded Eretz Israel. So why Gdusha Shleime was not discontinued, was continued throughout the ages? And Gdusha Yeshua was discontinued throughout the ages? It was discontinued? So the Rambam answers, you know, we all know the answer. Gdusha Soaretz, in the time of Yeshua, was based upon power, upon military victory, upon conquest. Yeshua was strong, he conquered the land, he consecrated the land and hallowed the land. Nebuchadnezzar was stronger, he conquered the land, he put an end to the Gdusha Soaretz. But Beis HaMikdash, he says, Eino Elo Mipnei Ashchino. The fact is, Beis HaMikdash is Kodesh not because somebody conquered Beis HaMikdash, because of military conquest, but because the Shechinah resides, abides on that particular spot. Ushchinah in Optelo Leilo. The Shechinah is never, it can never be removed from that particular spot. Va'ri'eimer va'shemesis migdashechem omru chachomim afal pishishemim imheim bigdushosam harem. True, God abides in both, in Binyan and as well as in Churban. Gdusha and Churban are not conflicting ideas. God abides in splendor and in grandeur in the vast stretches of the universe? Of course. As well as in the desolation, loneliness, bleakness of the Harabais throughout the ages. Either the beautiful universe with endless, uncharted lanes, and all that is just the abode of God. Why should you reside on a lonely mountain or hill, which, I mean, covered with ashes and debris? Why should God not move away from that particular spot? Apparently God has a different approach. He resides in the universe. He resides in a small place which is bleak and dreary, which for 1900 years has stood alone, lonely, without hope. God refused to leave this, the spot on which his house once stood. The sanctity of that spot continued throughout ages. So the Mishneh and the Rambam, I mean he quoted the Mishneh, have decided that Vashemeses Mikdashechem should be interpreted into what? Into the positive. It means after Fish Shemim, even though they are desolate, there is desolation, it's still Bigdushasam ending. The Gdusha continues. Now let me ask you, why did the Chachamim interpret like that? Why did the Chachamim interpret like that? Yes? Why? What prompted them to interpret like that? Perhaps Hashemesis Mikdashechem means I'll simply destroy your sanctuaries and the idea of Gedusha and exaltedness will vanish. So just the land, Yerushalayim and the Harabais will be just as holy as any other spot, or just as profane as any other spot in the world, in the universe. What do you say? Yeah, but the question is correct, Amari. But however, if the Mishneh in Megillah said so, and the Rambam accepted, and the Rambam also quoted the Mishneh in Megillah, is apparently there is a reason, and that reason has got to be found in Chumash. Or not in Chumash, exactly, I mean in Teira Shebiksah, which prompted our scholars, our rabbis, to interpret Vashemeses Mikdashechem in a positive sense, not in a negative sense. What forced them? Yes, but what about the Chumash? It might be. I believe. Huh? What? I don't know. If Amos was the answer, I wouldn't have asked it. No. There's got to be, this answer has got to be developed in basic terms in our outlook upon the world, in our perspective, in our world perspective. I believe, I mean, last Shabbos when you heard the Mafti of the Chukesai, did you ask yourself what is the link between the Mafti of the Chukesai and the Parsha of the Chukesai? The same question which I raised with regard to Amos, I'll raise the question, what has got Amos, what has got the after of Hashem Uzi Mo'uzi? This was the after last Shabbos, got to do with the parsha where the Teichachah is made, was formulated. What? If you ask me, three words in the parsha, six words in Yirmiyahu. Will you, if you have Achumash Vayikra, open up the book Vayikra and please and cast a glance on the affair. There are six words, strange words, but those six words have influenced our Chazal, our rabbis, to interpret the Hashemesi as Mikdashman, Afatish Shem Meim or Brishos Meim, in enthusiastically and in terms of our Emunah in the future of Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. What? Six words. Six words. And that's why this affair was chosen, this portion of the prophet was chosen, Yirmiyahu was chosen to be the affair of the Chukesai, Behar and the Chukesai. What? No, you are guessing. Correct. There is a strange puzzle. Correct. It was said already. I'll let you finish. Yes. We read a very strange sentence. Kisei Kovet, Marom Mirishon, Mekei Mikdoshenu, Mikve Yisroel Atom. The throne of glory on high. And it happens that the traditional translation is pretty good here. The throne of glory on high from the beginning, the place of our sanctuary, the hope of Israel, O Lord. What does it mean? Kisei Kovet, more revision, the Kisei Kovet which was established from the very beginning, Mekei Mikdashenu, the abode of our sanctuary, Mikvei Yisrael, you are the hope of Israel. What idea did Anovi express or formulate in this short six-word sentence, which I say is such great importance, I mean, for the interpretation of Hashemesh Anies Mikdashenu? What idea? I mean, you all know the idea. I call this idea the double image theory. The double image theory. It's not, don't get frightened, it's not philosophy. Double image theory. The word double image theory, I derive the term, it's my term, so. I haven't plagiarized anybody. The double image theory, I derived this theorem from a story of Chumash, which you all know. The story of Chumash about Jacob, who stopped over for the night in a certain place, when he saw the ladder, you know, I mean, standing on the ground, reaching the skies, heavens, Umalache Elikim Eilim Yerdim. And the angels of God were climbing up and descending along this ladder. So the Gemara in Chul says, Eilim lemailo, Yerdim lemato, they go down to Jacob, the real Jacob, the physical Jacob, who is tackling with Yukne, and they take a look, a good look, at his face, at his countenance, his body. He's a good looking guy, isn't he? The Eilim lemailo, who is tackling with Yukne, and they go up to heaven, and they take another look, but this time not at the physical Jacob. Physical Jacob was sleeping. And the Jacob whose image was engraved in the Kisakom. That's what Rashi says in Chul. So in other words, each Jew has two images. The image from Lemata, the physical image, and the image of Lemaila. The image which is engraved in the Kisakom. And not only people have a double image. Any institution in Yahadus has a double image. Shabbos, So what is a day of rest? So the Midrash tells us, no, excuse me, Rabbi Lemke, the mentioned Zeya, so I have to mention too now. The Zeya, I believe, in the Agdomi or in the Yakil, I don't remember exactly. Says, Veshapsei Sait Ishmael. So who tired, the Bedouin met Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, the Bedouin, the famous Bedouin, the tired, who was acquainted with Kol HaTorah Kula. This Bedouin met Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai and asked him, why is the Shabbos mentioned in the plural, not in the singular? Shapsei Sait Ishmael. So Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai didn't know. So the Bedouin began to deliver a shiur about it. And finally, the consequence of that treatise which the Bedouin has developed of the idea that Shabbos has two images too. One is Shabbos Miletata and Shabbos Leilo. Two images. Two different images. Whoever, and I believe there are many chassidim here, even though lately they stopped saying the governor, but there are some here who say Kegavna. The whole idea of the double image of Shabbos is actually, I mean, expressed in Kegavna. If you'll next time, Friday night, you'll pay attention to what you're saying.